Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. All right. Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Joe Sharon. Alongside me, my co-host, Tommy Asuma. Today, we have a very special guest joining us, someone who has played a pivotal role in shaping our culture, providing elite instruction, and cultivating our growth at Smart Golf and Fitness Instruction. Our very own OG Director of Instruction, Nick Kuka. Thanks for joining us tonight, Nick.
Well, I'm thrilled to finally be on the pod. Thanks for having me.
It's about time.
We haven't had a guest in a while, so this is great. And to bring somebody of this elite level on for our first guest back after a little while, I'm excited as well.
Very excited. We're going to discuss Nick's journey from playing golf in college to becoming an award-winning and highly respected PGA professional. You'll soon learn Nick's journey is filled with passion, dedication, and a commitment to helping others grow in the game. Not too dissimilar to us, Nick left a stable career at a country club to join Smart Golf in its early stages when the future of this company was still pretty uncertain. And his leap of faith has been instrumental in shaping the success we see today. In this episode, we're going to dive into Nick's background, what drives his love for the game, and his vision for the future of golf instruction at Smart Golf and Fitness. To kick things off, the first question I would like to ask pertains to your profile on our website. You got a quote up there. We actually ask all our staff when they join our team. We all have a bio page. And we like to ask our coaches to say, come up with a quote that you feel strongly about that represents or might have some sort of insight to your approach to coaching in one form or another. So your quote is, honest self-reflection is the starting point for any long-term improvement. Can you please expound upon that?
Yeah, of course, definitely. I don't remember how I came to that, you know, 5.5, 6 years ago, actually. But I think it probably pertains to one is like our assessment that we do here. So, you know, the first thing that I'm trying to get to do when I get to know a new student or a potential student, I want them to do some self-reflection. So we come and we sit down in this room, and before we even hit a golf ball or go up in the gym and do anything, it's a lot of just interviewing that person, asking a bunch of questions, and trying to get them to reflect upon their golf game. I can't tell if that's necessarily honest all the time. Maybe, you know, sometimes maybe it really is. It can be really like heartfelt and they've got great insight into maybe why they're struggling. Other times it might be kind of cliche and they're looking more for some quick fixes and they just heard we were good. But I'm definitely digging and I'm trying to kind of poke and prod and help them kind of see the light there. But then really that's what that assessment process is all about, is I'm getting to know the person, get their reflection on it, but then I'm going to go test. And, you know, I just think that there's no point in really guessing much these days. Like, we've got all this amazing technology. We have an amazing team around us. So, you know, we're going to go see what you're doing, right? We're going to go measure it and we're going to kind of leave some emotions on the side here. And it's pretty black and white. Hey, this is what's going on. This is why the golf ball is going the way it's going. The art and, you know, is trying to kind of figure out how to connect with that person and get the proper game plan in place for them. I certainly think there's definitely a handful of ways to do it for sure. But just trying to put that in front of someone and, and again, I think that's where the honest reflection comes from. And I don't want to throw any quick fixes anyone's way, you know, be honest about the learning process, how long it's going to take, like what their expectations should be. So,
yeah, the way
no bullshit.
You got something you want to say, but the way I was going to say is the way I interpret it is we've talked about it on a number of episodes. We talk about it all the time within the walls of this facility is we live in a culture of instant gratification. And guys are perusing the, you know, online, looking at YouTube, looking at Instagram, and they're looking for the shortcuts. They're looking for the quick fixes. But if they're truly honest with themselves, which you wrote in your quote, they know that that's not the truth. They know that that's not the path. And if they're genuinely serious about actually improving, that's not the recipe. Is that fair?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think we're fortunate. I think we work with a lot of really smart and intelligent and awesome people. And when you speak to them truthfully and honestly, and maybe you don't sugarcoat it, they appreciate that, and they know it, you know, through all the hard work they've put in their lives in different facets. So it's a nice way to connect.
Yeah, I think it also provides some insight for the coaches. Up in the gym, we do this all the time. How does this feel? How does that feel? Get some subjective data or information back from them. But you said you're trying to build rapport with this person. We have a whole bunch of technology out there that you mentioned as well, which are BS detectors. So you know what you're getting when that person first steps in the bay. Does this guy have or gal have a clue about what's going on with their golf game, or how far off are they? Especially in that first initial assessment, you're spending, you know, a good amount of time with them and you're trying to figure out what that baseline is, what that plan is. But from a coaching perspective, you have to treat every client a little bit differently based on their personality, based on what they bring to the table. You know, you talked about talking candidly, can't really do that necessarily right out of the gate with some personalities. So this gives you some insight as to what this person brings to the table, how they can be approached, how they can be coached from the get-go and stuff, because they'll talk to you about their game. And then if you're like, this doesn't align with what I'm seeing at all today, you'll massage that and you'll talk a little bit about, hey, here's what I'm seeing and here's how I'm going to go about and attack that. So
yeah, it's definitely important to understand what they're trying to do and, you know, maybe what they like are feeling in their golf swing. I worked with someone today that, you know, he was trying to, it took a while to kind of get it out of him. He didn't reveal this right away, but he was trying to hit down on it more. And he's just chunking every single chip. And it was really, I think, just his concept of actually like even hitting down on it was honestly the issue there. And because he thought that down was getting deeper and digging into the ground. So you got to really kind of dig deep. You got to ask the right questions. You got to keep asking questions. And that's what we do every single day. So
cool.
No, that actually makes me think of a conversation I was having. I'm going to give him a shout out because he was just playing golf with us on our annual Smart Cup, which we will be producing a recap of next week, but was with Kyle Dreger, and he was, you know, we were talking golf instruction. He was looking for some advice. I don't know how the conversation got there, but it does draw some parallels to what we were just discussing. But you've heard me say it. I go, there's kind of like, you know, call it four stages of, you know, prior to execution. There's delivery of the information, right? That's just the concept, right? The data, what we've discovered, what's going wrong. That's the what. And then it's the interpretation. All right. So how are they interpreting it? Okay. That could be different right away. Right. Then that goes into their intention. Right. Okay. That could all also be different. And then it ultimately comes out to execution. And I always say, I just wish our job was as easy as saying, here's what you're doing. Here's how I'm going to communicate it to you. They process it exactly how you processed it as a coach. And all of a sudden they have the eye-hand coordination and skill level to automatically result in execution. And that's to our point, going through and looking at all of this content online and just thinking that your ability to take the information that's being delivered and go through those stages this, you know, equally as anyone that was looking at that content is just, it's asinine.
Cool. Love the quote. Love where we're going with this, but I think we want to hear a little bit about Nick and his story. So can we
start at the beginning?
Talk to us a little bit how you got started in golf and
from birth, how you fell in love from birth until now.
Exactly.
You can
as far back as you want.
You tell us where you're from.
Yeah, I'll give you the quick summary, you know, if I get it all right. I'm from Arlington Heights originally. It's northwest suburbs of Chicago. Probably found the game maybe age like 12 or 13. Maybe I'd hit a golf ball or two, like in my yard, a wiffle ball before then. But it was more my grandpa played. He's a pretty avid golfer. My dad was getting into it a lot more. You know, that was probably like kind of peak Tiger years too, like late 90s, early 2000s.
So did your grandpa introduce you to golf?
Probably like my dad slash my grandpa. My grandpa lived, you know, down the street in like Mount Prospect. So, you know, I could even probably like ride my bike there. And Mount Prospect Golf Club's a great little like local muni spot. So I would try to go hang there, like probably age 13, 14. Started to take some golf instruction when I was 14. And that was from Dan Kochvar, who's a former, you know, Illinois PGA Coach of the Year, you know, worked with like a lot of really good juniors. I was really lucky that my parents, you know, started to invest some time and money into me, allowed me to take like a golf lesson kind of every couple weeks or so. And I remember
you guys ventured down to like the Oak Brook area, or where was he teaching at the time?
So Dan was at the driving range that was by the Wyndham Hotel, like in Itasca. Do you remember that like old range that used to be there just north of Itasca Country Club? And then he went to Oak Brook. So Eventually I saw him at Oak Brook, and it was dome in the winter. But this was all like at a time where, I mean, I was playing a ton of junior basketball. I was like 5 feet tall. I was actually probably like 4'10". I was pretty convinced I was going to be in the NBA. Like I just kind of
so thought, just a little shorter than you are now.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it probably speaks to maybe how stupid I was, but you know, luckily, and the other thing that I wanted to do too was like tennis was kind of our sport growing up as a family. My sister's a very good tennis player.
Hey, let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
Could you beat Schaefer Deegan 1-on-1?
Like, cut off the record here. I mean, no comment. I won't touch it. I was playing a lot of tennis. I was playing a lot of basketball, organized sports. And golf was just something that my grandpa did. I probably went to the range a little bit. I wanted to play football, honestly. But I, you know, never didn't do any tackle growing up or anything like that. And then my parents like looked at me and like had to sit me down like that summer going into freshman year. And they were like, wanted me to play three sports, and football's in the fall. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, I think I'll try out for like freshman football. And I'm like 4'10 and like 95 pounds. And they're like, you can't play football. So they're just like, we will not allow you to play football. So then I took golf a little more seriously that summer. I was talking to a junior parent the other day. I remember vividly, I told him the other day this, I shot like 110 maybe in my first tournament. Cried my way off the golf course like you should when you shoot 110 in your first tournament. You know, it's a little bit overwhelming. But by the end of that like summer, so within like a 3 month period of time, I was breaking 90 and like shooting in the 80s and was able to play some freshman golf. And, you know, like a lot of kids that age, like, I was pretty decent at some other sports. You can pick up stuff really, really fast at that age, like 13, 14. And, yeah, got down to a good enough golfer to play some Division III golf. So
I was just going to say another example of content that we've produced in the past of an individual that grew up playing a lot of sports, was introduced to specific skill sets at certain windows as you know, aged. And by the time you were 12, 13, 14 and really decided to take golf seriously, you excelled at a very rapid pace.
For sure. I mean, I think I didn't know kids that really played golf. Growing up, I didn't know any of my friends that played, and I think a handful of us kind of picked it up around the same time. And you know, most of us that got like quote unquote good were, you know, we were probably the kids that were the best at basketball, and we were the kids that were pretty good at, you know, recess football and stuff like that. So you know, I talk to parents all the time about just how important it is to expose your kids to a bunch of different sports, and you know, not to take this game, you know, super, super seriously from day one, you know, just introduction and the joy and the love for it. And I think what just attracted me to it was just the continual build, like the way to just continually like self-measure yourself. And it was just cool, like having a sport where I could just play and I had a number and I could easily tell if I was getting better or not because my scores were getting better or worse. And that was really attractive to me, where, you know, team sports isn't always like that, right? Like one team wins, one team loses. So, you know, golf I thought was like fascinating, where it's hard to win a tournament for sure, but you could always feel proud or, you know, disappointed depending upon how your results were.
Do you remember what your scoring average was your senior year?
In high school? Yeah, it was probably, like, you play a lot of 9-hole matches, so I was probably around like 1 or 2 over par or close to par for like 9-hole matches.
So where did you go to college then? Because did you go straight to, were you playing on the team your freshman year of college?
Yeah. Like I played in tournaments freshman year in college. Yeah.
You want to share what college you went to?
I went to Illinois Wesleyan.
Okay.
Titans. Go Titans.
And you played there all 4 years?
I played there 3 years.
3 years.
And then I did not play my senior year. I didn't play on the team.
Got it.
I got an economics degree. At that time, I thought having a good education and getting a real job was really important. And
so that was a choice at that point.
Came back to, like, I should just play golf all the time.
So how did that college golf experience kind of shape?
You know? Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think, like, maybe a little bit of, like, I think Joe probably had a question of, like, maybe why I didn't play the fourth year. I would say that's burnout, you know, just, like, complete burnout. So
the schedule of a college athlete's extremely demanding.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think we had a very good Division III team, but I didn't go to Division I program, like, and I was a little bit of a realist. I think I still am a little bit of a realist. Like, I didn't have aspirations to play professionally per se. Like, I was just kind of feeling
there was never that chapter. Never that period of time.
I mean, not that I like. Really recall. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard game. And I think I was just could see where I was plateauing a little bit. And I think what's hard too is, like, just to tie it back to like golf instruction, I remember taking some golf lessons my junior year because I was really struggling, right? Like, my game was, I played in tournaments freshman year, sophomore year, you know, and then we were recruiting like better and better kids, and then I'm not playing junior year. Now, granted, though, my game's not really improving. It's just kind of like stagnant. And then I remember taking some golf instruction and from a guy named Rick Sellers down there. Rick was great. I mean, all the coaches I worked with were great. And, you know, it's just like, man, like, there was probably some things that I really needed to, like, retool in my golf swing. And you don't have time to do that when you're playing college golf. So, and that was kind of a little... I shouldn't say like discouraging, but that probably like played a little bit of a role in it too, where it was kind of like, all right, like, and this kid's probably shooting like 75, 76s, and now we've got some better kids here that can shoot like under par more regularly than I can. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I probably should like get these grades up before I graduate. So
when
got a nice little 4.0 my last
when were you class. First aware of the job of a, you know, PGA professional, and talk to us about, from, you know, wrapping up college, you got a degree in economics, kind of the path that you went through to ultimately decide you were going to take the career of a PGA professional.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I have only ever worked at a golf course or a golf facility in my entire life. I joke about this with my wife. I've probably seen an office building, the inside, less than 5 times in my entire life. So I know they exist. I drive by them. I see them. But I've never actually experienced one. So age like 13, got dropped off at a country club, learned how to caddy. Wasn't very good at caddying. As I alluded to, weighed 90 pounds. So at the time, there was still some like Rodney Dangerfield golf bags around. And I was definitely only a single bagger. Wasn't really good for much double bagging. And then I was able to get a job at Itasca Country Club, working in the bag room, later on in high school. And that was a great opportunity. Phil Benson, my boss, was great to us. Like, I was getting to be a pretty like decent junior golfer at that time. So he was pretty flexible with, like, when we could play. So it was a little better than being a caddy. Caddies, you can only play on like Mondays. Bag room at Itasca, there was only like 8 of us. There's no caddies there. They let us play at like the end of the day, kind of non-peak times. So then I got to, and that was really cool. And that probably like, again, shaped me a little bit too, in terms of, I didn't spend a lot of time at a driving range like as a kid. I spent a lot of time on a golf course. So I would have like an hour at the end of the day to go play, and I would hop on a golf cart because I was 16 and could drive a golf cart and go play 14, 15 holes until it got dark. And so I really like learned the game a lot on the golf course. That probably helped significantly. Just trying in terms of like learning how to score and short game and stuff like that. And then eventually I helped, you know, Phil is more of like an assistant golf professional eventually, kind of like later on in college. So, you know, every summer where it was like, all right, I'm getting this econ degree. All right, go home this summer, go get an internship in like the financial world. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but like, I got to like prep for all these golf tournaments that I'm playing, and I got to, you know, play for the team next year. So being by a golf course and being surrounded by golf was such a natural fit for that. And it just kept like, that just kept progressing where I just never took an actual internship and didn't even apply for any. This is all like, was perfectly fine. Like, I had the support of my parents, and, you know, post college, I moved down to Florida, and at the time they had an ability to do a accelerated program where you could kind of get jump start and you could get done with like your level one PGA books in 1 month. So I saved up some money from working at Itasca.
So you moved down to Florida knowing at that point, like, I'm going to go through the PGA program.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, because, you know, I knew very well, like, the role of a PGA professional, through, you know, Dan Kochevar, who teaches, you know, Rick Sellers, PGA professional, teaches. And then, you know, obviously like Phil Benson, who was my boss at Itasca. So I knew like what that role that Phil had looked like. So I'm like, yeah, you know, even though I didn't go to like a PGM school or something like that, I'm like, well, you know, hey, like, I know golf courses, like, it might in and out. You know, not surprising. I was a pretty social like kid, and, you know, just always that kid that was happy to see people, like, happy to learn everyone's names, only their last names though. Everyone's Mr. and Mrs. So no clue what their first names are. So yeah, I mean, I think it was just a kind of like a natural fit, and I just wanted to continue to be around the game. But I also graduated in 2009. Like, what a bad time to graduate with like an econ degree. There were no jobs. So I just, I was able to find some work down in, Florida.
Where in Florida?
Just outside of Orlando. So yeah, I did a PGM program at Port St. Lucie. I brought two suits down there with me. And, you know, so basically once I had, like, I was done with level one, typed up my resume, went to like a Kinko's to go print it out. And then I would just rode around in my, you know, Honda Accord, and I put my suit on for the day and had my stack of resumes. And I just Google searched, you know, I assume Google was the thing at the time, whatever it was. I just searched whatever the top like golf courses were in Orlando. And I would either make a phone call ahead of time if I could get a hold of the guy, or I would just roll into the parking lot and sit there and see if I could get an interview. And the first person that I did that with didn't have a job at the time, but called me back probably, so it was probably a little bit. Like, I ended up finding like a, you know, a cart job or whatever, just working outside at this one place that was perfectly fine, but it was a little bit of a hike from where I was living. And this guy, Todd Van Meer, who's, you know, one of my first boss down, or I should say my second boss technically down there, he gave me a call maybe like a month and a half, 2 months later, and was like, hey, I just had one of my assistants quit. And I remember he's like, you were the guy that walked in with a suit, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, that really, really impressed me. So he's like, come back in. And, you know, you reminded me a lot of myself at that age. So, yeah, impressed Todd. And Todd was great. I mean, like, still to this day, like, one of, minus you two guys, one of the best bosses I've ever had.
So, what club was that then?
That was at Harmony Golf Preserve, which is like a high-end daily fee. So it was public, and it was like a Troon Golf property. So I then kind of got into like the Troon Golf world. Which is kind of cool.
Had you finished the program at this point?
Not like all like levels. So like an apprenticed.
Okay. And had you met your wife at this point?
No, I hadn't met my wife.
Okay.
A little later that summer.
I was just curious.
Yeah, so I met my wife. My wife's from South Carolina, but she lived up in Chicago, and so obviously I'm down in Florida at the time. And eventually I met her like when I was visiting some friends up here. And that led me to kind of eventually have to pick. We did long distance for a while, but you know, Truen is it's an awesome company to work for. I mean, they were great like as a young kid, and they had like awesome training material, some really good like training and stuff. And maybe it was just because I had a great boss too, and Todd, where like they had customer service like totally dialed. And I was super into that. And I was there like a year and a half. Yeah, I guess that's all it was really. Seems like longer than that.
Now at this point in your journey, you know, joining the program, accepting this position, did you kind of have a vision of what, because there's several different career paths you can take as a PGA professional. Obviously one's coaching. You can go into being a sales rep. You can go into, you know, tournament operations, et cetera. Did you have a vision
club
that,
fitting.
Yeah, exactly. Did you kind of have the vision of the, I guess, more traditional, hey, I'm going to try to climb the ladder to become a head pro and run a club? Or did you know you wanted to coach at that point?
I definitely didn't know I wanted to coach at that point. At that point in my career, I probably had taught like junior golf clinics, just, you know, from even back like in Itasca, like helping the other assistants there, being like a decent junior golfer. I'd helped like teammates with their golf swings, you know, taking golf lessons like into that, certainly. But when you go work at like a high end public course where like people are rolling in and, you know, they're going to pay like $125 to play a round of golf, like they're on vacation, like they're probably not taking a golf lesson, right? It's like those type of operations, like there's just not many lessons to give. Whenever there was one, like I'm a hand raiser, so like I raised my hand and just went out there and tried and probably taught the world's crappiest golf lesson. And but you know, felt pretty proud about it, gave it my all.
What was your hourly?
My hourly rate at that time? Who knows? I mean,
free. I actually paid them to come.
No, it was probably, I charged something. I don't know. I was probably more than happy with whatever they paid me. But
all right, so we're at Harmony. You were there a year and a half. Yeah. What's next?
So eventually I came back up, took a random summer job at a place called The Grove. That was a cool opportunity.
This is back up here in Illinois.
Yeah. Then, nah, so I think
maybe. Grove. Yes. Not Grove 23.
Not Grove 23.
Let's not get confused.
MJ didn't have his own place at the time. So, I mean, I think maybe to answer your question earlier of like at the time, like I just got this job for Truen and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty cool because I could eventually become a head golf professional. I eventually could become a director of golf. I could become a general manager. I could run a territory. I could run an entire region. I could get a corporate job. I could become a CEO in golf. So it's kind of like, that's probably somewhat what I was interested in. But then circumstances changed where like I couldn't be there anymore. And I had experience in country clubs and certainly like loved and enjoyed like working in country clubs. Had an opportunity, came back up here, interviewed for a couple things, eventually landed with Jamie Brighty, who was the opportunity that I thought was unique at the time because it was basically a country club that sold the membership, you know, ran into a little bit of trouble, if you will, and they had to sell. So a single owner like came in and bought the country club. So we basically took over like the 30 members that wanted to stay. And then we had to attract like new members from scratch. So like opportunities like that, I mean, kind of a combo of like starting a new business coupled with golf, you know, was really interesting to me. And then eventually I just moved into the cliche high-end country club stuff. Worked at Indian Hill, worked at Exmoor.
Well, that's
I shouldn't say cliche, but
I honestly think the first time we ever met, you and I, mm-hmm. was at Indian Hill Club. Because okay. I used to come out okay. there and do some little fitness clinics. Dick Wagley was out there. So
for
you
sure.
guys had this open space, like banquet space you clear on out, and I'd bring a little bit of equipment, and Dick would do a good job of getting some members out there and stuff. But
we either did that in the men's locker room or like maybe in the lodge, which maybe isn't used as much like in the summer. But yeah, no, Dick was always a good player himself. And that was probably my first exposure to TPI. So, you know, and then the person that brought me to Indian Hill was one of my college teammates, Chris Green. And, you know, Chris did a different path than me after college, went and worked with Jim McClain So Chris is all like super into teaching. You know, so Chris has got a track man from like day one, and you know, I'm there helping out with folding shirts, running tournaments. But certainly like started to get to teach like a lot more at Indian Hill. And then eventually when I got to move to Exmoor, there wasn't a Chris Green that I was right next to. So like there was probably more opportunity for me to teach there. And then, yeah, I think that it kind of, to bring it back full circle, teaching is just like a really unique opportunity to really, really like be an awesome hour in someone's day. Might be a challenging hour, but it was definitely like the way, at least that I felt that I could kind of improve someone's experience like the most, other than just being like a warm, friendly person and trying to throw a kick-ass tournament for them or, you know, something they're really excited about. Like I loved all that stuff too and still do. But like the teaching just felt more special. So that's what brought me back to teaching.
When you accepted the position to Exmoor, was it already communicated to you that teaching, there was going to be a larger opportunity to coach? Is that a big reason why you accepted it?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think, who knows, it was a long time ago.
What year did you start working at Exmoor?
That's a good question, John. You have tough questions, man. I gotta pull up my resume.
Roughly.
So, I probably was there 5 years. So that was like 11 years ago now.
Yeah. Okay. So that was only 2 years after you graduated. You ended up at Exmoor.
No. I think we're bad at math. Or I'm bad at
Wait,
math.
What year was that?
I was out of college in 2009.
2009, so. And you just said 2011 is when you started at Exmoor.
I said 11 years ago.
Oh, gosh. 2013.
Yeah, it's 2024 right now. We'll let the audience, you know, sit here and do the math for us.
2013 sounds accurate.
It does sound roughly
yes,
around
that. Does. Okay, does so you had 4 years roughly outside of school before you ended up at Exmoor.
You know, and I think I knew that had a reputation as like a lesson-taking club. And I think as a golf instructor, those are always like good words to hear. Granted, I also think they're a little bit ridiculous words to hear because it's like, all right, if this isn't a lesson-taking club, like, be a good question of, like, why? Like, what's the current staff doing to lend itself to, like, that reputation? So clearly, I think there was some assistance there before that I knew taught a good amount. Actually, I did know one of them who was leaving, and that's kind of the person that I was, like, backfilling for. And I knew, you know, Brian at the time, like, this guy, Brian Coe, taught a lot. So I was like, okay, I had a good grasp that was going to get to be like a really big part of the opportunity. And that's huge as an assistant because at least at the time, I don't know if it's changed much, but you know, I mean, your salary's not killer. So pretty small. And you know, going to get to teach, you know, like whether it's an hourly or you're selling some packages and you know, that was a big change to my income, at least as far as like the golf industry went. But yeah, then I, you know, I still probably thought I was going to do like head pro stuff. So, you know, just kind of kept throwing my name in for stuff like that. But maybe a little different than like some guys. I was not going to put my name in for like every single job. One, my wife's got a very nice like career for herself here in Chicago. So, you know, just it wasn't like I was going to chase jobs in Indiana or Iowa. So, you know, I'm really just kind of looking for something that was Chicago-based. Had a couple, you know, kind of interview processes. Never really, like, landed anything there. But every year, you know, as this is going on, you know, I'm just teaching more. And you know, then it probably just became, like, a math thing. I just sat down and used my econ degree and was like, wait, I could teach, you know, how many lessons and I could spend how many hours a week.
Do you remember how we met?
So I was probably involved in the Illinois PGA. So we hosted, I don't know if that was like spring meeting, but it was definitely like some education where we brought in some speakers. And, you know, maybe I think I got up on stage. I probably wore one of those suits that I wore down in Florida, you know, and try to be my professional self and introduce whatever speaker that I was, you know, highly unqualified to be introducing. And then I think you introduced yourself to me there.
We ended up sitting next to each other at the same table.
So the irony too was that I knew who you were, at least by name, because I was working out at Old Smart Golf with a trainer who, you know, he wasn't like directly part of the team. You know, he was just a trainer, like That's renting right. space.
I do remember seeing your name in the TrackMan software.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, so I'd been in your facility. It was always on a Monday, you know, and at the time, I don't think you were there at the facility on Monday. And so it was kind of like, hey, it was my one day off of the week, and I would come in and see the trainer, you know, early in the morning, and get a workout in, and, you know, like hit a shot or two here and there. And, you know, it was like, oh, yeah, like I've heard of Smart Golf. I'm a client.
Well, that's funny because, you know, at that point we were in our original location. We won't go in too much depth with it, but we were ready to, you know, make the next step and hire a, you know, essentially we're looking for our right-hand man, you know, to help us continue to grow. And at that point, it was just me, Tommy, and I know we had Block A. And then did we have, do you remember when we brought you on?
Kyle was there.
Yeah. Okay. But no, I just remember sitting and, you know, anyone that's met Nick, as you're listening to this episode, you know, obviously extremely well-spoken, very intelligent, and does a very good job at presenting himself. So within, you know, honestly, 8 minutes of meeting you, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what can I do to get this guy to join our team? And he said, you know, as you alluded to earlier, you were talking about how it just became a math thing, talking about your finances. I literally remember pulling out my phone and doing some math on the calculator and showing you a number. And your question was, well, how many guys are coaching that many lessons a week? And I go, well, we only got a couple, but we're both there. And, you know, you can be the next. But anyway, at that point, you know, we had left that meeting and I'm like, gosh, this guy's at Exmoor. We're in an infant stage of our company. There's no way. And, you know, I didn't think there was a chance in hell we were going to be able to recruit you, but you called me and we ended up having, I don't know, a handful of quite lengthy conversations.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you could share from your perspective, you know, had a pretty good job at Exmoor. Obviously we talked a little bit about the finances, but what all played the influence where you finally said, hey, I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to leave my stable job and I'm going to join a company that, I know is relatively early, you know, since they've started. And, you know, I want to know share with the audience what were all the factors that played in your decision to join us?
Well, I think you asked some good questions earlier that spurred my memory, and maybe is helping me reflect on this better than I maybe have in the past. But I think there's a few things. One was, you know, early on in my golf career, you were asking me, like, you know, what was my goal? And I think it's interesting where kind of, you know, if I don't, you know, if I exclude kind of the stuff that I did, like growing up in high school or whatever, and say like my golf career started like right when I graduated college, my first opportunity was with Troon Golf, and that was kind of like a big company. And I had an econ degree. So I'm like, I just like knowing how the sausage is made. And so I was intrigued and I liked the fact that you guys had a company. And I liked the fact that it was small. So that I thought was very, very interesting. And then through Indian Hill and Dick and Tommy and TPI, eventually like I did all the TPI certification and stuff like that. So, and that certainly like, you know, getting to work with TrackMan early on and then getting that early like exposure to TPI and going to do the seminars in person and doing all the online education, that stuff really like shaped a lot of my teaching. And then getting into fitness myself and then coming to the facility like and kind of seeing the value for like myself personally there. So it's kind of like you guys were hitting all the, whether you knew it or not, like, well, one, I already came into your space, so I already like was like I was a client, if you will, right? Like I was working 6 days a week, so I was only there working out like for an hour a week or so. But it's like, hey, I already like what you guys are doing. I believe in it for myself. I believe in it for my students. I have a heart, like at that time, you know, it's like you're a golf coach and you're kind of following this TPI model. It's like, okay, you got a player in front of you. You want to assess them, see what they can and cannot do. You know, maybe you're only seeing this person for an hour, so you definitely want to stick to what they can do. But the hope is that you're developing a real long-term coaching relationship. But then when you're off doing it on your own, you got to go find a trainer for them, or maybe they have a trainer. Like, okay, hey, how do I, oh, does your trainer know anything about golf? Like, oh, they've been TPI certified. Like, oh, that's great. Like, doesn't happen often, but sometimes there was some crossover there. But the fact that it was in one, it's Smart Golf, the fact that it was in one building makes it hell of a lot easier. So and again, it was kind of like, there's always this dream scenario where you would just put together golf, you'd put together personal training, you know, the physical fitness, and you put together like PT all under one roof. And there's not many places in the entire country to do that. We happen to be one of them. I'm like, you know, money aside, man, like, I mean, at the end of the day, like money is just like kind of, you need it, right? And it's kind of like, it's obviously going to weigh in like decision-making and stuff like that. But I mean, that's not, I don't think that was anything to do with the decision really. I mean, it more was just like, I need to go teach full time. I need to stop wearing all these other hats. I mean, it's ironic because I wear multiple hats here too. So it's not like I just am teaching. But it was kind of like, look, I need to bet on myself. I need to cut my teeth a little bit more. I need to go teach, you know, 10 hours a day as opposed to being able to teach maybe 4 or 5 hours, but then get, you know, pulled back into the shop. So it was kind of, it was an opportunity for me to really become a full-time teacher and make a pivot and become more of a specialist. And I think that's a good decision for a lot of people. So I think the industry is maybe moving that way a little bit. We'll see. It's an industry that doesn't move very fast.
Nice. What do you enjoy most about coaching? You know, what do you love most about coaching? You had expressed earlier that, you know, the opportunity to make sure that you're, you know, giving that person, you know, being a highlight of their day and giving them a solid hour. But, you know, deep down, what do you love most about actually just being a coach other than just being able to improve a person's day 1 hour at a time?
Well, I think it's that. I mean, like, yeah, so I do think the emotional side of it and like seeing someone like really, really happy. And one and the other thing too, I mean, what's interesting about us is, you know, we see these clients, like we see our clients on a weekly basis. So that in itself is very self-fulfilling because it's like this person's choosing. I mean, particularly once you kind of been working with a student or student for a while, you know, you didn't force them to be there. Like they're choosing to take an hour out of their very, very, very busy day to spend with you. So that's pretty cool. And that makes you feel really special. And then it also maybe puts a little bit of pressure on of like, hey, you know, it's an important hour of this person's week. And then, you know, you develop some deeper relationships and truly friendships. Like all that stuff's really, really cool. I think what in the nitty and gritty of like the teaching, I just like the problem solving. Like I love watching someone hit a shot. I love seeing the TrackMan numbers come through there. I love figuring out the puzzle, looking at the data, and then kind of like that puzzle and challenge of, okay, now how do I just get this person to hit this golf ball in the intent that they're trying to hit it? And like, it's that process of like, you know, okay, maybe I don't need to spew a bunch of things in a bunch of words. Maybe I can just gotta varying my approach and seeing how I can get the results from that person. And again, so like, I just think that kind of teaching is such a challenge. So like, it's that daily challenge for me personally. You know, maybe that doesn't have anything to do with like the results of the student. I mean, that just keeps your brain going.
How has working at Smart Golf helped shape you and grow you as a coach? And what might you communicate if you were to maybe even sell the opportunity to a younger coach and how working for this company can elevate you as an expert?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do a handful of things that are really unique. One is like, to be a great coach, I hope I'm qualified to say this, but it's like, I think you have to have a pretty decent understanding of how the body works and moves, right? And I don't think that every golf coach out there has that. And we don't necessarily you know, when I'm hiring someone or bringing on like a new coach, that isn't necessarily like a prerequisite, but it's something you get a very unique opportunity to lean into our fitness staff here and learn a heck of a lot more about how the human body works and how the body moves is incredibly important. How we're all built and wired a little bit differently. We spend a ton of time on the training and, you know, through, I mean, again, through a lot of different outside resources, but learning a lot about how the human mind like works and how, you know, the brain like learns a motor skill. And so, you know, that's like a lot of what our coaches meetings and deep dive talks are about. It's probably usually drifts more that route than it does like technical, you know, flexion, extension, you know, all this other stuff that we certainly talk about too. And then the fact that we, you know, commit an hour a week to have a coaches meeting where we share, you know, kind of best practices or we sit down, we do education together. You know, so I think it's really like unique. Like we're definitely, you know, one of the companies and, you know, maybe there's a few of them in the country that, you know, kind of have these bigger teams. But I mean, you don't learn it all on your own. So, you know, being around like a team and being surrounded by a bunch of other experts, always try to surround yourself by people that are a lot smarter than you. And, got a lot of the smart guys in the room. So I think the longer I've been here, I speak a little bit less each year and I listen a little bit more. So I still speak a lot, but you know.
Where would you still like to grow as a coach and instructor?
I mean, yeah, it's a great question. I think like all facets and areas, you know, I think one of the toughest things is, again, like your success is so tied to how good is your student at practicing. And I think that, you know, I'm probably already trying to do this and I will continue to try to do it. And it's probably the biggest area to make the most significant improvement in is just being able to like figure out how to, whether that's like through like writing, you know, better practice plans and come up with, you know, drills and maybe scripting out like the hours or, you know, but it's tough. It's not just that. Cause it's like, well, if you got someone that, you know, they're just going to crumple up the plan and throw it out, how do you still motivate that person and get the result that you want? That's an uphill battle. But I think that is where, you know, more time needs to be spent. And I think there could be some interesting ways to, try to figure out a way for us to like do that stuff. Maybe as a team, I think we talked about like a little bit the other day too of like, you know, we brought on interns and stuff like that. And again, that's maybe not so much a me thing. It's like more of a company thing of like, you know, hey, if we had a college intern here one day, like, you know, it's like, oh, hey, if I, you know, I loved basketball growing up. So it's like, all right, hey, if I'm the head coach of this like coaching relationship with this client, and, you know, I got my other like co-head coach and the fitness instructor, you know, what if there was like a assistant coach or like, you know, a college intern coach, like what would that coach be doing like in this relationship? And I think there's like unique opportunity to like, you know, be writing like lesson plans and stuff like that. And, you were more so like practice plans and, you know, things of those nature that, you know, it's hard to do it all yourself. I think it is. We try to, but it's tough. You know, team approach is super helpful. Hopefully that answers your question a little bit.
Sure.
Sure.
Tommy, do you have any questions? I have several more, but if you're thinking about any over there. He's just not that interesting, Tommy says.
No, I'm very interested. I've learned a lot so far.
This is awesome.
And stuff like that. So I love the flow of it so far. I mean, what...
let's talk about smart golf a little bit. You know, here's a good one. In your opinion, what is smart golf and fitness's biggest differentiator compared to other golf instruction facilities?
I would say what makes us significantly different is we do not offer, and I don't offer, and I always tell people this, I'm like, I don't offer one-off golf lessons. That's a question we get a lot. I understand, and I'm not offended why we get that question, but I'm just looking to work with the people that are all in. And I only want to work with the people that are all in because I'm all in. And I think our team is all in. And I think the people that understand and appreciate like learning and getting better at something see that and are attracted to us. So I think that's the big differentiator, right? It's like I use the analogy of learning how to play a musical instrument. It's like, oh, hey, did you learn piano as a kid? Like, oh yeah, I learned piano. Yeah, it took a one-off, lesson, and I just feel like a whiz now, And it's like, well, I don't know how piano instruction is now. Maybe with YouTube, maybe it's changed, but it's like when I learned to play guitar as a kid, I'm a terrible guitar player. Don't play anymore. But when I tried to learn, my parents signed me up for weekly lessons. And then my parents, I think they're halfway smart people, very smart. I'm just kidding. They're very smart. They signed me up for like basically bi-weekly golf lessons as a kid. Like I didn't go just take one golf lesson as a kid. It was like just Dan Kochevar taught me every, 2 weeks at this time slot. So like, I think for me, like one-off golf lessons were a bizarre thing. Cause I was like, well, who in the world would take one of those? Like I didn't take any of those growing up as a kid. But then you get off in this world of, trying to kind of help people on the fly. I think it's all good intentions, but, it was, all my best students at, Indian Hill or Exmoor. I mean, they're just the people that saw me on a pretty regular basis. So I wanted to work with those people. And then I think that was another thing about coming here to Smart was I knew that it was an opportunity to find those clients and, and be able to help those people.
Cool. Well, we really appreciate, what you brought to the table. Like Joe said, you've been a very critical piece to our growth over, the last several years, and look forward to your involvement. So like as director of instruction, do you have any goals initially or long-term or any milestones you have in your mind for yourself and or the company as we continue to grow together?
No, that's a great question. I mean, look, I think it's important to, a couple things here. I mean, so one, I joined the team again because, we were small and we talked about at the time too. We knew we were going to probably go from the old place on Concord to this place. That was really, really exciting. So I think as the director of instruction here at Lincoln Park, I'm really excited about future growth. Like we have a new location coming on board with Northbrook. That stuff's just really exciting to me. I enjoy being part of something maybe a little bit bigger. But, again, like I just don't get myself too wrapped up in, I could care less about any sort of like award or accolade or, crap like that. Like if all my students just get to their career lows and handicap index and shoot best rounds and send me some nice texts and some thank yous and I get to go on a cool golf trip here and there, which I get to do a lot of. Look, I'm living like a freaking great life. So I think it's just so important to be super excited and thrilled with like the day that you have coming ahead of you. Obviously some days are challenging, more challenging than others, but I love my day to day. So I think that's just, if I didn't love my day to day, then I'd get too stressed, worrying about all the future stuff. So I'm excited what we have coming around the corner. And I think you guys are the bee's knees and, super happy to be here. And, I'm really excited about what we get to do on a daily basis, honestly. So probably skirted around your question. Didn't have a perfect answer, but
There's no perfect
answer. Let my two cents, my bit of advice, I guess.
Sure. So how do you see like the industry itself evolving and how do you see us playing a pretty critical role in trying to help the golf industry continue to evolve?
Yeah. I mean, I think that like golf is a hard sport and teaching it and being able to help someone get better at a sport that's pretty challenging, that like, you know, every day like presents like a pretty great challenge. That's really, really important. And being able to, you know, organize a you know, country club staff and provide great customer service, yes, that's important too. Being able to have a beautifully merchandised shop, that is also important. But I wonder if the industry will kind of hopefully maybe find, you know, just good customer hospitality people to, you know, sometimes maybe do some of that stuff, right? Like, so if I walk into, you know, a nice country club and I'm looking for a polo or something like that, I don't necessarily need that person to be a scratch golfer. I just need that person to be really nice and helpful. You know, it's really nice and it's great when you run into any sort of like really nice and helpful people and, you know, really genuine people. So I think the industry doesn't need to find like all the scratch golfers, all the golf sickos and nuts that just, you know, really love the game for maybe all those roles. And then it's like, hopefully more professionals can kind of get more into like their passion area, which I hope their passion area is, you know, more involved in the game, whether that's, you know, playing the game and being more of an ambassador, club fitting, you know, doing what we do, golf instruction. So how we play a huge role in there is like, well, hey, if you're a golf instructor listening to this and you want to come work with a team full of golf instructors and fitness coaches, like that's where we come in, right? Like we're a huge part of that. And, you know, I think, for the general public that's playing the game, fitness is important. So it's kind of like, you know, these golfers that you see on TV, it's no secret now, like they're great athletes. So, you know, hey, you work a desk job. Like, I'm not sure if you're going to become a world-class athlete here, but, making a, you know, smart decision to come in here and, you know, grind on not just your golf game, but, you know, maybe your health and your personal fitness. That's never a decision that any of our clients have ever regretted. So I think we play a super vital role in that regard. And I mean, in some regards, like I think the fitness team is probably, they're changing people's lives much more than golf team is necessarily. I mean, we've probably had some guys come to us with some pretty real, like heart to heart stuff about, you know, how the fitness component, you know, really, really changed things around for them. So I just fix, you know, hooks and slices.
So you've touched upon this a couple of times throughout tonight, but I still want to ask it point blank. You know, what advice might you offer to a young professional or individual considering a career path as a PGA professional?
Yeah, I mean, I think that my advice would be, my advice would be teach the game and come work at golf, smart golf and fitness. But I do think that what's a little scary about the industry is maybe just kind of like the old habit of like a bajillion hours. And, you know, it's probably, I'm not sure if the juice is worth all the squeeze, you know, it can really kind of burn you there. So I think we do a unique thing here where, you know, we're working hard. I mean, these guys love what they're doing and teaching and being on and in front of your clients is definitely like draining. But at the end of the week, you know, we're putting in 5-day work weeks here. You know, we're giving guys 2 days off a week. So, you know, and teaching I think is maybe a unique opportunity to maybe kind of find some of that balance right from the get-go. I mean, look, if you want to teach every single person on the face of the earth, you know, well, you're going to have to work a lot of hours, but you don't have to, right? I mean, I think it's a nice way where you can kind of have a good balance, and you maybe don't feel as like obligated or burdened, to kind of be there like at all hours of the day with like, the manpower, which is just tough. I mean, it just is, it's hard to sustain. You know, you gotta really love what you do and you gotta have a family dynamic that can maybe allow you to do that. So yeah, I think it's just the industry as a whole, it's getting hard to find that.
I think that's great advice. Tough question. I think this is one that if I were to be asked, I would want a little bit more time to have some introspection on it. But I'm still curious to what you say.
I can't wait for this
one. What legacy do you hope to leave both as your role as a coach and as a leader within the SmartGolf organization?
That's a good question. Legacy as a coach, man, legacy is such a big word. I think legacy as a coach. I'm going to go more legacy as a leader first. Because I think that's maybe almost a little easier. I just want to be known as someone that cares about people and is really hopefully a good person at heart. And I really want to help. I mean, it's interesting, right? It's like so much of my day is about helping my students. But then when it comes to our team members here, I'm more than happy to help any of these, guys or girls. So I care deeply about the team members that we have. Try to hire good people. And, I really think they are good people. And, I want to just be there for them. And I think I want to, share some insight and, again, like try to kind of, it's like, how do you bridge that gap between, getting the result that you want out of them? But keep them motivated at the same time. So it's like employees to me are just the same as a student, right? Like I can't just yell at a student like, oh, you're slicing it. Like, stop slicing it. There's just no real point for me to, kind of bring someone down. Like if they're underperforming, I gotta talk honestly with them, as maybe as a leader, really like just come in, do one-on-ones, like have some honest conversations. And then it's the kind of the same like coaching mentality of like, okay, hey, how do we get this going the right way? And maybe that's more of how it is, not so much a me thing. It's like, how do I help this person get things going the right way? And kind of get some better results out of, things that they need and, in their role, whether that's in the ring or outside the ring. Maybe it's just kind of parallel. Like that's my legacy. That's what I'm doing on the coaching side of things. Maybe they're not as different or compartmentalized as I really think about them once I've start to speak about it out loud. The two things might not be that different. So
no, I love that.
I think you did a really good job answering that.
Well, thanks, man. It was a tough question. Legacy is a big word. It's like, I just want my jersey retired.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, I just want, like, can you get, like, this hoodie flying in the rafters here?
My 8-iron hanging from the rafters.
When people think of Nick Kuka, what do you want them to think? All right, so we got a couple more questions here, but more so focused on, we're focused on some of the professionals, but more now the lesson takers, if you will, or just really anyone looking to improve their game. If you could offer one piece of advice to someone that is looking to improve their game, what would it be?
One piece of advice. Okay.
They just want to get better. That's all they know. That's all they know.
That would be find a highly qualified golf instructor. And, I shouldn't say I'm highly qualified, but like, again, it's like, I think what's nice is like we fall in that boat, right? Where it's like, I think we're highly qualified. And in terms of like, you need to find someone that's done some research, right? And it's like, you got to find someone that's an expert. Hopefully that expert knows that they should be surrounded by some personal trainers and a fitness team and have like more of a team aspect and a team approach. And then maybe another way to answer that question is delete social media and delete YouTube. I'm probably the one that should be watching more of that and not you. Like, I might see something, but like, oh, that was a very interesting way for that person to, get that viewpoint across to that student. That's more insightful for me because that's something I do as a profession, where I get to maybe see peers, share information there. A little bit scary when, the student is WebMDing themselves to death. So maybe my advice, I'm switching. That's my answer is like just maybe what they shouldn't do.
I love it. Okay. Well, I think that
more or less wraps up most of what we wanted to go through tonight, but I want to leave it up to you. Any final thoughts or any messaging you'd like to share before we conclude tonight?
No, I mean, hey, just thanks for having me on the pod. I'm glad I was finally able to make it work. It's fun to talk about what we do. And again, I just hope more people in the golf world just respect. And again, I think it's like, you should go, like, and whether you're like, hey, if you live here in Chicago, come call us, you know, pick up the phone and call us and come on in here. But, you know, wherever you are, like, go, if you care deeply about getting better, go find your guy or girl, right? Like, find your person. And don't go into it thinking that it's just going to be like a one-time thing, right? Like, I've got a guy I like to go through to for like a sports massage. So it's like, oh, I got my sports massage guy, right? And it's not like, all right, yeah, I go to him when I'm like hurt or bad or whatever. And it's kind of funny. It's like, I feel like some of my clients, it's like, that's how they are, right? Like, it's like, they've got their guy. And it's like, oh, if they're struggling with something or even not, like, it's like, I'm just one thing. I'm one of their people on their, like, you know, repertoire of people they go to, right? Like, they got a personal trainer upstairs. They have me. Maybe they learn piano. So, they also take a piano lesson every week. And then they go do, like, Muay Thai boxing or something, right? Like, again, like, it's just, I just think it's really important that if you're looking to get better, just find someone to work with, and it's going to be a rewarding, it'll be hard at times, but, you'll get much more longer term, like lasting results. And, if you're a golf coach, you should offer long-term programs, and this, cause it's really how you can truly, have a greater impact on your students in the long term. And, well, maybe don't do that because we'll get less phone calls.
I do love that answer. It's such a Chicago answer. I got a guy. Get yourself a guy.
You got
to get a guy.
Or a girl, you know, whatever. Like, you just got, like, you got to have your team. I mean, look, I know it all comes down to, like, investing in yourself. But, it's just it's nice to be around an expert. And I'm thinking about that just in other terms of my life. And, it's like when I go upstairs to work out in the gym, I think I enjoy working out, you know, and I've been inspired about being around you guys, but I like it a heck of a lot more when, you know, Caesar's taking me through a workout, or I like it a heck of a lot more when I'm doing a workout with Dan. I like having my guy. So,
like I always say, people, seek out development. You're not trying to fix anything. Seek out development. This is a long-term journey. Well said. Nick, thank you so much for your time, your effort, and being such an amazing asset to our organization. We love you, man.
Well, thanks so much.
Dude, thanks for coming out tonight. Get bets.
Appreciate it, Jen.
Cheers.
Awesome. Cheers. Woo. Cheers to my empty Hickley Springs. Thank you, Hickley, for spotting.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following @SmartGolfFitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.